Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, October 6th, 2013. This is episode 1020. Oh, just like the Nokia Lumia 1020, only different. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Go to LegalZoom.com for affordable legal solutions you can trust. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but you can get self-help services at your specific direction or speak to a legal plan attorney to get your questions answered and get ongoing advice. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the promo code TECHGUY to get $10 off at checkout. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at Gazelle.com. And by Ring Central. I love my cloud-based phone system from Ring Central. Zero startup costs, and Ring Central is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to get together. We're talking about computers and the internet. We talk about smartphones. Oh, there's a lot of cool smartphones out there now, huh? We help you choose them. We help you upgrade. We help you figure out how to use them. Every weekend at this time, if it's got a chip in it, you call me, you talk, we'll talk. We'll figure out what's going on. We'll get to the bottom of it. Have you ever wondered? You know, I was wondering the other day. I was watching The Daily Show. Love The Daily Show. And a lot of shows do this now. Jimmy Fallon does it, The Colbert Report. They will take a montage of, well, I just saw one was a local news reading a press release, right? That's local TV news. And they all said exactly the same thing because they were all working off the same press release. And it was kind of embarrassing, right? And Jon Stewart gets a lot of mileage out of that kind of thing. But I wonder, I sit here and I watch this, I think, what poor intern or army of interns more likely has to sit there culling through local news over and over, trying to find all of this stuff. This must be a Herculean task. No, it's not. It's technology to the rescue, and it's fascinating. It's a company called Snapstream. Now, I've known Snapstream for years. We used to tell people about Snapstream. It was software you'd put on a Windows PC that would let you do a DVR and turn it into a home theater PC. It was pretty good software, too. I think we showed people how to build Snapstream-based HTPCs. Well, it turned out that this company was struggling a little bit because everybody had a DVR. And more importantly, the companies that were offering video signals were doing everything they could to keep you from recording them yourselves. They wanted you, they wanted you to use their own DVR so that they didn't have to worry about piracy, basically. Snapstream was, you may remember the product, the program is called Beyond TV. It was great. But by 2006, the fact that everybody got a DVR with their cable company, and frankly, the cable companies made it darn hard to record otherwise. Cable cards never took off, things like that. So the company decided to pivot. And what a pivot. This is kind of smart. They decided to offer high-end, super-duper TiVo-style recording to the media itself, to The Daily Show, The Colbert Report, to NBC, to CBS. The big media companies didn't have the same problems with copyrights that you and I might have. It's kind of, they're using it for news. It's okay. So Snapstream built these giant, powerful DVRs, digital video recorders. They run on Windows Server 2008. They have massive hard drives. But what's interesting about it is they record everything. They record 30 channels at a time. Not one of 30, all 30 or more channels at a time. They record every TV show. And then, at the same time as they're recording the TV show,
they're recording metadata, stuff from the TV guide, of course, but also closed captioning. A lot of these shows have closed captions, right? They're recording it all. And then they store it all in a giant database, a Microsoft SQL Server, and they give you a search engine. And so now what would have probably taken 30 unpaid interns days to do, a single editor can type in the key phrase that they're looking for, and the SnapStream server in the rack in the back will say, here. They even let you clip the little clips, save them to a folder, mail them to somebody else, scale the video, do whatever you need to do to make it usable. Video is ingested into the SnapStream from the cable feed at a variety of resolutions, everything from high def down to 480p. They use very fancy industrial capture cards that are designed to be used with the QAM cable system. They cost about $1,500 each. This is not something you'd want. Actually, it is something you'd want in your home. Probably not something you could get in your home. But this is how they do it on The Daily Show and other places. SnapStream. It was kind of fun. I read this story. I think it was on Ars Technica. And I thought, oh, that's what happened to them. They're cool looking. Very fancy stuff. And it makes it very easy to go to scan through every broadcast and find exactly what you're looking for. And then edit it all together. I love that. We can talk about that. We can also talk about Netflix. What do you think of the Netflix recommendation engine? Is it good? Does it, you know, if you use Netflix, it watches what you like. You're invited to rate the shows. And then it will offer you. In fact, my Netflix got this person, this new Max or something. It says, would you like Max to help you? It's very annoying. They took it out after a while. But they realized that the problem Netflix has is because they don't have everything on Netflix, people get burned out. They go, I can never find anything. So it's really important that Netflix be recommending to you on a regular basis stuff you actually like so you'll come back. Well, here's a funny thing. How do they find out what shows to recommend? Even more importantly, what shows to buy? From Torrent Freak, the website, this story, Netflix uses pirate sites to determine what shows to buy. They just rolled out Netflix in the Netherlands. But the Netherlands is a new market for them, and they don't know what TV shows and movies are popular in the Netherlands. So what they do is look at what's being stolen. Oh, that's smart. Because it figures if lots of people are downloading illegally downloading a show, they must want to watch it. They actually admit this. Vice President of Content Acquisition for Netflix, Kelly Merriman, says, with the purchase of series, we look at what does well on the piracy sites. They bought a show called Prison Break because it's exceptionally popular on piracy sites. He does say, the CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, says, we know that many people download content without permission, but we don't think it's completely a bad thing because it also creates demand for the shows that we offer. Certainly, there's some torrenting that goes on, and that's true around the world, but some of that just creates the demand. And what we're hoping is they'll see, yeah, it's so much easier. I just go to Netflix. It's right there. You don't have to deal with files. You don't have to download them. You don't have to move around. You just click and watch. I think actually this is a good response to piracy. Instead of trying to shut it down, give them something better. People pirate video because they can't get it any other way, because they have to wait a year before it's available, that kind of thing. Make it easy. Make it available. Give them what they want. Guess what? People will do it. And, you know, they'll pay $7.99 a year for it. Of course they will. However, the most pirated show of all time, certainly of recent memory, what was it? Do you guess? Game of Thrones on HBO. And you know what? No matter how much HBO, Netflix begs HBO, they cannot get it. HBO, hey, HBO's wise to you. Sorry. I don't know. They say they're doing it in the Netherlands. I don't know if they do it here, but you got to figure. That's certainly one way to you know, measure the popularity of a show. I think that torrent sites, the piracy sites, should have charts like Billboard magazine. Number one with a bullet. This is the most pirated show of the week. Do they do that? Oh, maybe they do that. Oh. I don't know because I don't visit those sites. I truly do prefer just to get my content legitimately, to either pay for it or stream it from Netflix. And the thing that worries me when you go to a pirate site is, what are you going to get? You're going to get the movie? You're going to get a virus? It just feels a little unclean. All right, enough of that. Let's get to the work ahead. Our phone calls. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Heather Hammon, the phone ranger. Hi-o Silva, and away. Hello, Heather Hammon.
Hello.
You weren't sure if my big intro was over yet. You wanted to hear more. Yes, right? a fiery steed, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-o Silva, the phone ranger, rides again. Hello, Heather.
Hey.
I should take a call, shouldn't I, right now?
Uh-huh.
This would be a good thing to do. Do you have one for me?
I do.
Oh, good.
It's Scott in Sherman Oaks.
Hello, Scott Sherman Oaks, listening
Hello.
On the great KFI. Leo Laporte here. Hi.
Hi. I'm listening to you on KFI, but I'm watching you on my Roku.
I love that. You can do both. Yes.
Yes.
Lip sync exactly. Won't be so great.
No, it's off a little bit, but it's all right. You're very big.
Are you watching us in a big screen, really?
Yeah, 51-inch plasma.
That's awesome. Samsung.
Yeah, it's good.
So people maybe don't know this, but during we have cameras on during the show because I do not only the radio show here, but I do a whole week's worth of internet TV. And so we always leave the cameras on. We do podcasts, audio and video of all the stuff. And you can always tune in, twit.tv. You can watch live anytime.
Yes, I watch Security Now and other shows.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, we have a Roku app that's very good. Just look for the Twit app in the Roku channel store. Thanks to Houdini7, who's in the chat room right now, who wrote that.
Awesome.
Yeah, so what can I do for you?
I have a request and a question.
Yes, sir.
The request was, could you ask Steve Gibson one day to look into Bluetooth deadbolts and stuff like that, the security?
I agree, because I would love the idea. You know, Schlage is making them. Lots of companies are making them.
Evo, yeah.
Yeah, and there's been Kickstarter projects, too, where you can walk up to your door and unlock it via your iPhone.
Yes. I would like to know how secure those are.
I would, too, and I'm sure it's very dependent on the implementation.
Sure.
But I think it could be made secure. You just have to have, you know, it's a similar, in my opinion, it sounds like it's similar to garage door openers.
Right.
There are garage door openers that are not secure, but then there are ones that use rolling codes that are very secure. So I think it's not Bluetooth. It's not whether it's Bluetooth is secure or not. That's just the wireless carriage technology. It would be how the lock implemented it. And I would think since you're making a door lock, you'd make it pretty secure.
I hope so.
Now, having said that, I should also point out that door locks are mere conventions. That it is easy to get in any home, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, we all act like, oh, if you lock your door, you're secure. You're not. And the reason I bring this up, it's very relevant to the conversations been going on over the last few months about internet privacy. And I read a great article, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who wrote it. So if you wrote it, I apologize. But it made a very good point. A lot of people have been saying, well, we've got to beef up our internet encryption so that the federal government can't listen in on us. You know, there's got to be an engineering solution. My friend Bruce Schneier, who is the security guru, said, look, it's up to engineers. We broke it. We got to fix it. We've got to make it safe and private to use the internet. We cannot allow the government to undermine that. I'm in agreement with all of that. But somebody responded, yeah, well, with all due respect to Bruce Schneier, who's brilliant, we also have to change the mores, the expectations. Your door lock does not really protect you against somebody intruding into your home. You can go around back, break a window, get in. There's always ways to get in. If you're willing to break the law and, more importantly, break social norms, you can always get in. The door lock is merely a signal. I want this to be private. The law and social norms protect us against somebody bypassing it. And encryption on the internet, yes, the NSA, we have learned, can break through this encryption. Absolutely. But encryption on the internet A, we could make it stronger, and we should. But B, is also, like a door lock, a signal to authorities and others that we want this to be private. And the law should protect us. I believe it does, but I think the NSA ignores the law. But maybe members of Congress could step up a little bit and start protecting us. The law should protect us. Social mores should protect us. If you've got encryption turned on, even if the NSA could listen, they shouldn't. And I believe the U.S. government has really, frankly, betrayed us. I understand why. I understand how this happened. After 9/11, we got very scared. We wanted to fight terrorism. And at that point, the NSA started committing hundreds of millions of dollars a year to figure out how to get around Internet privacy controls. And for the most part, they've done very well at it. I understand that. We want to be safe. But what's happened as a result is we've become a surveillance state. And I don't think history supports, if you look at history, whenever a surveillance state has been possible in a country, it has become a totalitarian state. Nobody has yet given the ability for total surveillance. No government has ever backed down and said, yeah, we shouldn't be doing this. Yeah, the Fourth Amendment means no unreasonable search and seizure. I think that probably means your email, too. Yeah, let's not do that anymore. Never happened. In fact, it's quite the opposite. As soon as law enforcement and government power gets to that point, it gets worse and worse and worse. And that we should change history. And let's maybe back down a little bit. Honor those requests that each of us are making for privacy. Let's not trade that for some sort of false security. And this conversation is just beginning, I know. Anyway, yes. And meanwhile, Bluetooth door locks, I will ask. You said you had something else you wanted to ask, Scott?
Yes. Okay. So every time I switch iPhones, one thing I never seem to be able to back up is the Wi-Fi passwords and logins.
Right.
And I work in a lot of different places that all have, obviously unique passwords and logins.
And it's a pain.
I use that Wi-Fi to connect a television signal through a live view. And so I need to maintain them, and I go back to places maybe only three times a year. And how do you back that up? Or is it possible?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I don't know. So when you do the full backup using iTunes,
yes,
it does not save those settings?
No. And when I switched from my 4 to the 5, it did not.
That's frustrating.
Everything.
And I have to say, I haven't used the iPhone full time in some time, so I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
On my Android phones, do back those up. So is there, let me ask the chat room, is there an iOS app? I bet there isn't, because it would have to get Apple to cooperate, that would let you save those settings. I bet there's not. Because Apple has to do it. Because this is an example of security. One of the things Apple says is we're not going to let other people, other programs, access these important settings.
Yeah. I started taking pictures of them.
What a pain in the butt.
I have 2,500 pictures on my phone.
Oh, man. Well, let me keep looking. There's got to be a way to do that. I know Android does. I know Windows Phone does. But I guess iPhone doesn't. And you would think it would.
Yeah, it's the one thing doesn't seem that I'm able to back up.
A little frustrating. I will find out for you. I'll keep listening, Scott. That's a great question.
Thanks, and I'll keep watching. Thanks.
Nice to talk to you. Yeah, keep watching on that big 50-inch screen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. You can just watch us on Roku. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Still looking for ways to save Wi-Fi passwords. Of course you can, and somebody in the chat room is pointing this out, point out that 1Password and LastPass will let you save them, but you'll have to paste them in. So our last caller of the last break was asking, how do I back up my Wi-Fi passwords on an iPhone when I get a new iPhone? How do I move it over? Do I have to re-enter all those Wi-Fi passwords? He said, and I didn't know this, that a iTunes backup of your phone does not save those passwords. You have to re-enter them. I don't know of an automatic way to do that. I suspect there's not. But I do know that if you use a password locker, and I strongly recommend this, I use LastPass. It's great. It's $1 a month. $12 a year for the premium version. That lets you use it on the iPhone and the Android phones and whatever other phones you're using. You can just, you know, copy and paste it in. I would do that just so you have it. It won't auto-fill it. It won't auto-record it, but at least you'll have it. And you'll have it, and this is the beauty of these password lockers. You'll have it stored securely. I cannot recommend this more highly. Please, that password you've been using, monkey123, it is not secure. Chances are you have the same password on a lot of websites. Do you? Yes, admit it. I do sometimes, you know. Yeah. That's not secure either, because if somebody accidentally leaks the password database for site one, which happens all the time, and the hacker gets it and then says, I wonder if Heather's login's the same on site two, and it is, you're in trouble. So you should be in all, you know, let's say the ideal world, you should be using long, 12, 16, 20 character, totally random passwords with upper and lower case numbers and punctuation all mixed together. And you should use a unique one for each and every site you visit. They should be totally random. But the problem with that is, how the heck do you remember all those passwords? Oh, you don't. You use a password locker. It can even generate these passwords. LastPass will do this. One password will do it. It can generate good, strong passwords, save them for you. Then you only have to remember one password, your master password. And you can make that one. It should still be long and random, but you can make it memorable. You could find ways to make it memorable. So do use those programs. Absolutely. And use them on your iPhone and your Android phone. Use them on your desktop. Use them in your tablets. And by the way, LastPass, another great thing. You have it installed on all of those. Those passwords are available everywhere, completely, utterly, totally, securely. And in this day and age, I think it's important. Enough said. Moving along. Let's go to Kevin in Folsom, California. Hi, Kevin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. It's Kevin. Just had a quick question for you.
All right.
I'm in the market to buy a new router. Going to be for home use, obviously. I looked into the Netgear R6250. Do you have any input on that specific one?
I don't know that one specifically, but I use Netgear routers all the time, and I like them a lot. Routers are pretty commoditized, frankly.
Right.
Somebody's going to say in the chat room, this is true, on the new iOS 7, that's right, there is now password syncing. Keychain goes across, so upgrade to iOS 7, and it will remember your passwords. Thank you, chat room, you're right. That's going to be part of the new Mavericks and the new iOS 7. Netgear's good. D-Link is good. Routers have become so commoditized, so inexpensive. I don't know if there's a big difference from one to the other. Here's a couple of things you want to be aware of. There's a massive security flaw that is still not fixed many months after it was discovered in what's called WPS. That's that one button.
Protective setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that one button thing. You push it on the front.
Right.
And then
it need to be disabled.
It needs to be disabled, and not all Netgear calls it push and connect. Right? Not all of them are disableable, and in some cases, with Linksys routers in particular, you disable it and it doesn't turn it off. It's still on.
Yeah.
And it means anybody who's sophisticated. Now, fortunately, that's not most people, but anybody who's sophisticated can just walk up to your router and get on it.
Right. In that case, can't you just go to a custom firmware and try to work around that?
And that's another thing to look at if you're that sophisticated. If you're buying a router and you're that sophisticated, my suggestion absolutely would be to buy a router that you could
purchase. Yeah, it was kind of a mixed feeling. I went to Fry's to look at that specific one, and the gentleman there told me, you can get plenty of custom party firmware because of the chipset that it's based on.
Yeah, go to dd-wrt.com. That's the big one.
I looked into that, and it's beta and...
Yeah. So buy a router. I mean, if this really is something you know how to do. Most people don't. Yeah. B, you want to do. And by the way, it's a great idea. You're taking that router and putting a new open source firmware on it that doesn't have any of these security flaws. And if it did, they fix it. See, Netgear, Linksys, Cisco, Buffalo, they never fix this stuff.
Yeah.
They just go, we know about it, and they never fix it.
Yeah, that Netgear, this router's got, dual core ARM processor.
No. I care about the software.
They don't even have that enabled because of their firmware right now.
Perfect.
Doesn't even let
it. Well, that's good news. I mean, so that means somebody in the DDWRT community is probably looking at that router because it has a lot of capability that's not being used. That means they'll probably will put a firmware out. There's two I like a lot. Tomato is one. Tomato router and DD-WRT. If they have a database of supported routers, you've obviously already been.
Right.
My suggestion, and Asus, by the way, they have an ad on the site.
I had an Asus, and it died like in six months.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah, they're supposed to be the best one, though.
They have an ad. They say, you spoke, we listened. Asus routers now support DDWRT. You could take any Asus router and update the firmware with a open source.
Yeah, and I did have DDWRT on the last one I had.
You're sophisticated.
ACE66U, and it just died out.
It's not hard to do.
Yeah.
Zendrome in the chat room says the RTN66U is $129-$150. That's expensive for a router. But I also find that the cheap routers, often you get what you pay for. This is an Asus.
Are you using Netgear in the studio, perhaps?
No.
No.
So we have a very hostile environment for Wi-Fi. Very hostile. So for a while we were using... we've always used enterprise routers, not commercial grade routers. And for a while we were using, I can't remember the name, but we eventually went to HP enterprise routers.
Mm-hmm.
These are very expensive, and they still don't work all that well because it's such a hostile environment. There's a lot of noise, RF, what we call RF noise, radio frequency noise. At home, I use Apple routers, and I'm very happy with them.
Yeah.
But they're overpriced.
Yeah, they're like $300.
Yeah, they're way overpriced, and they don't support DDWRT. So, but my experience with Apple routers has been so good that I'm hesitant to buy other brands. And I got the new AC compatible Apple router, and I've just had very good results with them. So, it's one of those things where it's $300, but you buy it once every 3 or 4 years, and I don't know. I feel like it's worth it. I don't know. My internet access is so important to me. I feel like it's worth it. Hey, I appreciate the call. I don't really... it's hard for me to recommend routers. There's certain things that I can't test because there's so many of them. Routers is one. Routers are one. Routers be one. Printers be another. That's why, and that's a shame because in the old days of PC Magazine, when there was actual money to be made in computer magazines, they had big labs where they could test 100 printers or 100 routers. But in areas where there are so many very similar products, it's just not practicable for me to buy 20 different routers and test them. It's not even the expense. I'd buy them. It's not the expense. It's the complexity of testing them. It's very hard to do. Get them in a difficult environment, see how they respond, put DDWRT on them, see if it works. All of that stuff takes so much time, I wouldn't have time to do anything else. So all I can say is look on the net, ask our audience. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we are talking high tech, taking your calls, answering questions. I love doing this as we do every weekend here. Thank you for joining me this weekend, and I hope you'll join me every weekend. Our website, techguylabs.com, has every show ever. Audio, video in the more recent, in the last few years. We started doing video, 5 years ago, something like that. And also a database of questions and answers you can search. And please comment and add your thoughts, because if you've got a better idea. Remember that router question we had a few minutes ago? That'd be a great place to go and say, I use this router, like it. I use this router, liked it. I use this router, no one ever buy it. Good place. Good place to go for that kind of stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO. D is on the line from Easton, PA, Easton, Pennsylvania. Hi, D.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm so glad you called today. Thank you.
Yes, and I'm glad that we found you on Ustream. Been a longtime fan of watching and screensavers, etc.
It always cracks me up because I'll run into people, still, even to this day, we did Tech TV 98 through 2004.
Uh-huh.
It's been 8 years, 9 years off the air. Still running to people say, yeah, whatever happened to you?
Yes. I missed it. But now I got it.
Whatever happened to you, Leo? Well, I started this, podcast network. It's basically Tech TV all over again on the internet.
Yes. Yep. So my question is, because right now, I have Norton's 360 antivirus program.
Oh, you do a search on YouTube for Leo Laporte and Norton 360. You'll find a video of me stomping on the box.
I hate it.
You and me both, Dee.
It slows down my computer.
Yeah.
It's
a bad idea.
The other thing is that I constantly get these things, and I don't know if it's Java is the problem or whatever, that I need a Java update, and when I go and I look and they say you have the current version of it, it just slows my computer down. Yeah. So I just want to know, what do you have any idea of?
Yes.
Recommend?
Yes. Yes. You know, what happened with Norton, and I feel bad, it's not their fault, it's our fault in some ways, is people started looking at, this goes back to the days of, as mentioned, PC Magazine. People started looking at the reviews, and they looked at those things in the reviews, the check boxes. You know, they'd do all the different antiviruses, and they'd have a row of check boxes. Well, does it do this? Does this? And people started buying. In fact, the companies would put these check boxes on their advertising. They put it on the back of their box. People would start buying stuff based on the number of check boxes on the software.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is the programs like Norton 360 just became bigger and bloated and huge. They'd slow it down. So by now, that thing, yeah, it's got all the check boxes, but you wouldn't want to put it on your computer, would you? So get rid of it. You don't need it. And now uninstalling it's a little challenging because it is an antivirus, among other things. It's a security program. So they don't want it to be too easy to uninstall because they don't want a malware to uninstall it, right? So run the uninstaller, but then go to the Symantec site, and there is a Norton uninstaller. You can Google it, too, that will go even farther. It will really get rid of it all.
Good.
Yeah. And then now it's gone, and sometimes, I have to say, this thing puts its hooks into your system. Sometimes taking it away can mean your internet stops working, so it might be a little challenging. You might want to read some articles about how to uninstall Norton 360, but there will be good articles online to do that, because you're not alone.
Good.
Now, I think, what version of Windows are you running?
7.
Okay, I think Windows 7 is pretty darn secure and will remain so for some time to come. So here's what I would suggest doing. You do run Windows Update, right?
Yeah.
Make sure it's turned on, that it happens automatically. Whenever there's an update, it's installed immediately. That's the first line of defense and very important. There also, in Windows 7, you can download, and I would download it, Microsoft Security Essentials.
Okay.
That's free at Microsoft.com/Security Essentials.
Okay.
It comes with Windows 8. You don't need it anymore. But in Windows 7, you had to install it by hand. And I think you're in pretty good shape at that point.
Okay.
That's the minimum. That cost you nothing, and you got rid of Norton 360. It does not bog down your computer. It isn't the world's best antivirus, but even the world's best antivirus won't protect you if you're not careful. If especially if you have teenagers. You know, teenagers, they put music downloading programs on there. They download stuff willy-nilly from anywhere. They don't pay any attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's where people get in trouble. Be careful about where you get files from. In order for a bad guy to attack your system, he has to get you to run a program. So, you know, they'll put links on your Facebook that say, hey, D, you won't believe what you did last night. And it'll come from a friend of yours with your name on it, but it was because the friend got hacked.
Right.
And the link isn't to YouTube, even though it looks like it is. And it says, oh, you got to update Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, oh, I got to update Flash. And you update it. And it wasn't Flash. It was bad stuff. So it's stuff like that. You should have an alarm bell in your brain. That anytime somebody gives you a link in an email, a link in an instant messenger, a link on your Facebook or Twitter, always be very cautious about clicking on it. And if it tries to install something, back off and say, where's this coming from? Look in, and be very careful. If you do all of that, you've got Security Essentials running, you turn on the Windows firewall, it's on by default, you're in pretty good shape. I wouldn't worry too much.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Hey, it's great. I'm glad you found me. Keep listening. I hope you will. I'll add a little bit to that. Of course, one of our sponsors, and I've loved them for years, is ESET. They make a great antivirus. It's the next step past Microsoft Security Essentials. It is a much better antivirus. The reason I've recommended ESET for years is it doesn't slow your system down. It doesn't get in the way. It is almost certainly the most effective antivirus out there. But as I said, no antivirus protects you against you. And any, you know, the reason Norton 360 is annoying, partly, is because it doesn't trust you. So you have to, and you have to jump through hoops to do things like run programs. My feeling is you should be more careful. You should be cautious. And then you can run an antivirus that kind of makes sure it backstops you in case, you know, something sneaks in. And I think he says a very good solution. It's certainly a good thing to have around. So that would be the next step beyond that. But really, ultimately, gosh, you gotta know what you're doing. ESET or Norton, nobody's going to protect you if you do crazy things. There are other solutions. Our chat room's coming up with a few, like running in limited user mode, unless you absolutely have to install something. Not a bad idea, kind of inconvenient. The thing to remember is there's a trade-off between security and convenience. And that's a big trade-off. So you got to give up a little bit of convenience to be more secure. And somebody debugging the chat room saying, all antiviruses are snake oil. Basically, if you just do the known good practices, it's enough. I have to say, all the security experts I know, and I include myself in this, none of us run antiviruses generally. Because we believe, foolishly or not, that we know what we're doing. I cannot, in good conscience, recommend that as a behavior for anybody who's not an expert. Because it's so easy to get bit. And I've come close many times. Many times. But see, that alarm bell is burning in my brain. I hear that going off more often than I should probably. So I'm not sure I'd recommend no antivirus. But it is the case that most of the security experts I know don't run an antivirus. They don't. And the reason is, in a way, it's false sense of security. And this is very important. I want to underscore this. It isn't all you need to do. It's not even close. It's a support, but it's not the first line of defense. You are running Windows Update, updating your third-party software. Anything that goes on the net should be updated regularly. Flash, Java, really important. Adobe Reader, all of those have to be kept scrupulously up to date. And security people know that. They know how to do that. And they do that. I think it's a lot to ask a normal person to have all that. So I think get a good antivirus. It's not a bad thing. Red Penguin says, I'm a very safe user. After 2 days with no antivirus, I got a random infection. Yeah, see, that's that's the other side of it. And maybe I'm falling prey to this. A lot of people who think they're experts are not. And I may be one of them. I knock on wood, I haven't had a virus or malware in years. Also, mostly use Macs. That's probably another reason why. And I don't go to a lot of the places. I don't have when I had teenagers, then I ran an antivirus. I had all sorts of protection on the network at home because the kids would download LimeWire, download any old song they could find. Oh, the worst. If you know somebody who's got teenagers using those computers, you know somebody who has a virus. Guarantee you. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We're going to take a break. Your local news coming up next. We're going to come back and answer more of your calls, have some more fun. You're listening to The Tech Guy Show. I'm Leo Laborde. I am The Tech Guy. Tech Guy broadcast today brought to you by our good buddies at LegalZoom.com. I'm a big fan. Actually, you know, I have kind of a personal stake in LegalZoom.com. Because for an entrepreneur, LegalZoom is really an amazing thing. A lot of you, I think, dream of creating your own business, but there are legal legal hoops you have to jump through, and you've got to take those steps to protect yourself and your business from the very beginning. But of course, when you're first starting a business, you don't, like me, I didn't have a lot of money. Kevin Rose said, you got to do an LLC, Leo, to protect yourself. That's why I was so happy we found out about LegalZoom.com. Like me, over the past 12 years, a million business owners have trusted LegalZoom to help start their business. They're going to save you a lot of time, a lot of money. You don't need a lawyer for a lot of the business that you have to do. You just need the right forms, and LegalZoom's going to help you. But they're also going to provide the self-help services you need to form an LLC or get a DBA or incorporate or whatever. Even with an attorney if you need, because they've pre-negotiated very low rates, flat rates, With attorneys in almost every state, you can choose the attorney based on their profile, unedited reviews from their users, and you'll know exactly what you're going to pay up front. You can get that phone advice, which is really, really nice. That's a nice new feature. Get an LLC or a DBA, incorporate or form a nonprofit for just $99. That's nothing. And by the way, they also do stuff for personal use, like last wills and testaments, trademarks, patents, protect your family, bankruptcy, divorce, immigration, personal injury. They do this all. Here's a big one. Everybody should be doing a healthcare power of attorney. Oh, man. Very easy to do at LegalZoom.com. Check it out. And if you decide you want to use their services, please use the offer code TECHGUY on checkout. We're going to give you $10 off, and they're going to know you saw it on the Tech Guy show, and that's good news for us. LegalZoom.com. Please, when you check out, use the offer code TECHGUY, all one word, for $10 off. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. How you doing today? Hour two of the Tech Guy show. We're talking computers and the internet, high tech. Our website is ready and available for you. James DeRuvo has been writing things down as I talk about them. He's putting it up on the website, techguylabs.com. You'll find our phone number there. You'll find the chat room there. Audio and video of previous episodes. We make those available for download. We also put them up on YouTube. Look, any way you want to watch it, I'm cool with that. Just make sure you watch it. And we can do all that, and always free. We'd never charge for the podcast, for access to the site, or anything like that. Thank you, our sponsors. Make that possible. Thank you, sponsors. TechGuyLabs.com. All right. What happens when a big email provider does something that makes its customers happy but makes spammers a little unhappy? Have you used your Gmail lately? I've become a big fan of Gmail. I was a little skeptical about this. Is the Google Mail service. I didn't like it for a while because it was so kind of alien to the way I do email. I've traditionally in the past used a desktop email client, a program running on my computer like Outlook or Outlook Express, Microsoft Live Mail, Apple Mail. It's running on the desktop, and that downloads the mail, and then I can read it offline, answer mail, and then it'll log in and send it. And I just find that easier. I just like it. Seems like it's more capable. I can have lots of filters and so forth. Google came along, though. How long is it ago now? 6 years, something like that? And offered this amazing service. First it was a gigabyte of free storage. They said you never have to erase a message. Store it all here, and it's free. Well, of course they don't want you to erase a message. And the reason it's free is because they put ads on the page. And this bothers some people. Doesn't bother me, but it bothers some people. Google looks at your emails to see what you're interested in and then uses those keywords to put ads up there. And that bugs some people. It's free. There's a reason it's free. They're selling you ads, so that's the way it works. That's why this show is free, because we got ads. If you don't like that, okay, it's fine. You don't have to use Gmail. And in fact, Google even lets you kind of control whether this, quote, ad customization, that's what they call it, happens. Anyway, Gmail's been trying for a long time. I think they realized anybody who uses email, anybody who gets a lot of email realizes email's broken. It's hard to categorize it. Spam's less of a problem. In fact, Gmail does a great job with spam. They use something called collaborative spam filtering. When you get a message you feel like is spam, you press that button. There's a little spam button at the top of the page. And you're sending a signal to Google, I think this is spam. Enough people do that, and they don't talk about how many, but I bet you 10 people do that. Then Google says, you know what, it probably is spam, and they just filter it out, and you never see it again. Google spam filtering is fantastic. It solved the spam problem, I think, once and for all. So now Google's trying to make email work better with automatic organization. It started with the priority inbox. It would look at who you respond a lot to, and it would say, well, that must be an important person to you. And so it would put that message in the priority inbox. It was okay. It didn't work great. And you could tweak it a little bit. I never warmed up to it. Well, I don't know when they started rolling this out. I got it about 2 months ago. I've heard not everybody has it. So if you don't have it, don't be sad. You'll get it soon. Now they have created up to 5 different kind of automatic folders, and it works great.
There's a primary folder. That's kind of the equivalent of the old priority inbox. There's a social folder. This is a brilliant idea. Now, you can create all the folders and filters you want on Gmail, but they do it for you, and it's kind of based on the same technology they use for spam. They kind of know what's social, and they take signals from you, because if something goes in your social folder and you say, oh, no, that belongs in the primary folder, you merely drag it there. Google will learn that, put it in your primary folder from now on, and I presume starts observing that and does the same for others. Goes, oh, yeah, everybody who gets an email from Twitter puts it in the social folder, must be social mail. So they've got, and you can turn these on or off if you want, individually, or I have them all on. I love it. So there's primary, there's social. That's mail from Twitter, Google+, from my social network, Facebook, that kind of thing, YouTube. There's promotions. These names aren't super communicative, but I guess they get the job done. Promotions are promotions. Emails that are promoting something. You might, some cases, almost think of these as spam. But usually it's something you signed up for or something you might be interested in. It's commercial promotional email. There's updates. And now this is interesting. And this one needs some work. But for instance, my son's at the University of Colorado, and the Parents Association email goes into updates. Yeah, newsletters you subscribe to go into updates, things like that. Now, I see an email here from Johnny Jett in my updates. Well, that's not an update. Sometimes I get a newsletter from Johnny Jett. It is. That's probably why I got confused. In this case, it's personal email. So I just dragged it over to primary. And from now on, when Johnny sends me something, it'll go in primary. Isn't that great? Love it. Finally, they've got forums. Now, that's really poorly named. I don't know what they think of as forums. It kind of looks like newsletters. The real point is I pretty much ignore everything but primary. I'll check primary every day, but social promotions, updates, and forums, I check them every few days, especially since I can move stuff around so it gets better and better. Well, this is really bugging some people. This is bugging retailers. This is from the New York Times. Retailers fight exile from Gmail inboxes. Over the summer, Claire Kane Miller and Stephanie Clifford writing at the New York Times. Over the summer, the internet behemoth, Google, gradually introduced a new inbox with an assortment of folders. I just mentioned that. A main inbox, ones for social networking alerts, e-commerce promotions, updates from businesses, and mailing list messages. Oh, that's what those are. Mailing list messages. Forums, they call it. I don't know why they call it forums. For Google, it's another money-making avenue. Now, this I didn't know. Note, the ads that look like emails that now appear at the top of the promotions folder, those are not emails. They're from Google. Well, I don't see any of those. But I'll take her word for it. To me, everything I see there is email. But they say that could be ads from Google. Okay, that's fine. Because I don't look over there because it's ads anyway. Yet that tiny change, or any tiny change the internet giant makes, the New York Times writes, has cascading effects for businesses across the web. I don't like it, said Ada Pola, chief executive of Alchemy Forever, a skincare brand. My guess would be you log onto your Gmail 20 times a day. But you look at promotions once a week. Yeah, you know why, Ada? Because it's spam. Retailers who have a love-hate relationship with Google say this is the latest tussle in an increasingly contentious union. Google, they say, has effectively classified their messages as junk mail, shunting them to an inbox ghetto. Yes, and that's why I love it. Retailers are afraid that fewer customers are clicking on their sites because they don't read the email. Now, you may have signed up for that email, and this is the point the retailers make. It isn't spam if you asked for it. It's only spam if it's unsolicited commercial email. The problem is Google doesn't know what's solicited and what's not solicited. Only you do. My opinion, if it's commercial email, put it in that folder. That's where it belongs. And when I want to see if I can get 40% off on skincare products, I'll go there. This has done a huge amount to make my mailbox much more useful. I encourage you to try it. You know, I don't need all that promotional stuff.
If you want, move it to your primary inbox. Otherwise, thank you, Google. You're doing me a favor. And email is a lot better. Finally. All right. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Leo Laporte. I am the tech guy. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Getting back to the... Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to say something, Heather? I see you. I see the little red light above your head.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. You didn't know there was a little red light? You're good? Can I get you a cup of coffee? Anything? That's a good sound effect. Hot. You know, people come to San Francisco. It's so funny. We're in the Northern California area. And they come in June, they come in July, they come in August. They come wearing shorts, short sleeves, tank tops, and they take a walk on the Golden Gate Bridge. And it's so much fun to drive over the Golden Gate Bridge in June, July, August, and watch them freezing their little tourist buns off.
The misery
They're so cold. They said, this is summer. What's wrong? No, you come to San Francisco, you come in October. That's when it's hot. Who knew? It's burning up today. September and October are the hottest months. It is the time to come to San Francisco. It's sunny. It's unbelievable. Much nicer. And on that note, I go to line four. Matt in Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
Hi, Matt. How are things in Portlandia?
A little rainy as usual, but, yeah. You know, we're dealing with it.
Is there a time of year one should go to Portland?
August. August is fine.
That's the sunniest time. Okay.
Yeah. The rest of the year, if you can handle the deep depression that sinks in, you'll be fine. But August.
I love living where we live because we get a lot of sun. It's nice. We get rain. We get a rainy season, but I don't know if I could stand the weather up there.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
What can I do for you?
Well, speaking of the Northwest, I had a question about Microsoft. I know you follow them pretty closely, and it seems like with everything that's going on recently with the CEO resigning and the...
They bought Nokia for $7.5 billion. This is crazy stuff.
Yeah, and Skype for, you know, however much.
Yeah, they've got... crazy.
Yeah, you know, Windows 8 not getting the best,
reception. By the way, in 2 weeks, Windows 8.1 comes out, and I do really feel like that's going to improve things.
You think so?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess my question was that they have the business market pretty much cornered, and they do that very well and everything. But I'm wondering what you think the future of Microsoft is, because all these consumer products they make there, a lot of them are just kind of copycat products and stuff like that. And
I think it's dim. I frankly think it's dim. The Microsoft acquisition of Nokia was, in my opinion, a Hail Mary play. Now, Microsoft's still highly profitable. Their revenue is billions and billions of dollars a quarter. Their profit is billions of dollars a quarter. So they're not going away anytime soon. But I don't feel that they are the company to watch in the 21st century.
And I think that's my problem, is that they have so many talented people there and so much money that they could be doing these awesome things like Google and Apple, but they're kind of squandering it on things, that are for technology enthusiasts like you and me, that aren't that fun and new and exciting, and I just feel like it's a big waste.
Well, and you know what happens is all of those bright minds want to work for a company, A, that has a stock price that's going up because they're paid partly in cash but partly in stock options, and B, they've got pride. They want to work for a company where people say, you work for Microsoft? How cool is that? You work for Google. Now, think of what company you're going to get that reaction. You work for Microsoft? You work for Google? How cool is that? You work for Facebook? How cool is that? Apple? How cool is that? So, if you're a really good, and this is actually a problem all of these companies are facing right now. Mark Zuckerberg took the stage at a Facebook developer conference, said, please write software, learn to be a developer. The good quality engineers are very hard to find. Are you a programmer? Are you in the business?
I am. I'm a web developer.
You picked well coming out of college.
Yeah, I think so. Things are going pretty well.
They're going well. You are in demand. And if you're really good at it, the sky's the limit. And in fact, I asked this question the other day of we had a panel of experts. And I said, well, if you're coming out of college, which company should you go to work for? And they said, no company. The smart people coming out of college are starting their own businesses. They're doing startups.
Absolutely, yeah.
You'd be crazy to go to work for Google or Microsoft at this time. It's done. Start your own Google.
Yeah, Microsoft feels like the place you go if you want to kind of have a 40-hour week job and do that kind of thing.
And if that's the kind of the quality of people Microsoft's hiring and can hire, they got problems.
absolutely.
Those are not the innovators. Those are not the people who are going to change the world. Those are the people who are going to maintain the code and make sure it works pretty reliably going forward. Where's my red stapler? They're not. They're not the kind of people that. So it's a vicious circle. As the company's reputation goes down, their stock price flattens. It gets harder and harder to get the kind of people that can turn that around. But that's why I say it's a Hail Mary. Because how do you solve that? You acquire a company that does have good engineers. And I think Nokia. Well, here's the problem with Nokia. Nokia has great hardware engineers. They don't have very good software engineers. Maybe Microsoft can say, look, we needed hardware innovation. We bought it. Let's bring in some software innovation. Maybe we can change things. It's tough. It's very tough. I mentioned this yesterday. It's the innovator. They call it the innovator's dilemma. The more successful you are as a company in the industry, the harder it is to maintain that success because you gotta continue to make the money on the thing you gotta dance with the one that brung you, but that means you're gonna get left behind.
And how much longer can they rely on Office and Windows when you have companies like Google making Google Chrome OS and making that a more palatable option for consumers?
So the only question mark is, can they get a CEO that can reverse the trend? And maybe they can. I've seen it happen. Ford was dying. When finally the Ford family said, you know what, we're not doing such a good job. We're running this company into the ground. They went to Boeing. They hired a young, smart engineer named Alan Mulally, who changed that company and literally turned it around. And it is possible. And that's a 100-year-old company. It is possible.
Yeah.
But it's tough. Apple was within 100 days of running out of money, of literally having to shut the doors. 100 days. And they, thank goodness, did a very smart thing. They bought this little company called Next, which had some pretty cool operating system software, and happened to have a guy running it who knew a little bit about Apple, a guy named Steve Jobs. And at first, he did not want to come back to Apple. He said, you guys, you fired me. You ran me out the door. I made a life for myself in the last 10 years. I started Pixar, or actually bought Pixar and made it into the company it was. He said, I created Next Computers. I'm happy. I'm fine. I don't want to come back to work for you guys. And I think, truthfully, what happened was Steve Jobs looked at Apple and said, this is my baby. I can't let this thing die. And it's going to die if I don't come in. I don't know if there's a good answer for it. It makes me sad to see any tech company, especially one like Microsoft. Don't people think, oh, you're a Microsoft hater? Microsoft gave us the PC revolution. If it were not for Microsoft creating a stable operating system platform that was reliable, that developers could write to, we wouldn't have had the PC revolution we've had. Bill Gates and company changed the world in a very positive way. Deserve all the credit in the world for it. And the problem they're having right now is the problem that any company, Google will have this too, Apple will have this, any company is going to face in the tech industry. Things move fast. And success in one decade almost guarantees failure the next. Hey, great question. Thank you for calling. Thank you, too, for being here, all of you. Chris Markwart coming up. I'm glad you're listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That guy right there is Chris Markwart. He's our digital photography expert. Joins us most weeks to talk about photography. And one of the things he's of late been taking on is a little photographic myth busting. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
Something happened to your picture. You're black and white. Oh, you are. You're supposed to be black and white.
That's all on purpose. That's photography. It's really that's where photography comes from. The first images were black and white.
What were the earliest? They were daguerreotypes, right, or something like that.
That was one of the early photographies where Mr. Daguerre actually managed to fix the shadows on the picture and kind of get a lasting image. And those were, they were not really black and white. They were more like black and silver because they were on a very shiny plate. And
you know what somebody's been doing lately, and I see these a lot, is taking pictures of New York or Russia or whatever, the old daguerreotypes and other black and white or sepia tone colors, and using Photoshop to color them. And it's interesting because, you know, if you see a picture of Abe Lincoln, you know, it's sepia tone. It looks old. It looks historic. But if you colorize it in a natural way, I'm not talking about, you know, the kind of weird hand-colored prints from that era, but in a natural way, it makes him look like he's modern. And you can kind of see him as a real person.
It's almost spooky, isn't it?
Yeah. I kind of like it. I know I like black and white, and we've been talking a lot about black and white. But sometimes colorizing like that is kind of cool. Anyway, what do you want to talk about today?
This is certainly different. I brought you another myth to bust. And the myth is you only need talent to be a great photographer.
Well, that's right. Well, this is the converse of the other myth you bust all the time, which is it's the camera, not the photographer.
Yeah.
I fall for that myth a lot, which is I'm a terrible photographer, but boy, if I just could get the right camera, my pictures would be great. Now, you're saying maybe it is important.
Well, you know, there's this common misconception that there are some prodigies out there. They go out, they take one picture, they win the Pulitzer Prize. But that is just a fiction, right? Oh, the question is, Leo, how do you become good at something?
Well, probably the same way you get to Carnegie Hall. Practice, practice, practice.
Exactly. You have to learn the ropes. And I'm bringing this up because recently I found a video on YouTube recorded by a photographer called John Free. He has been a documentary and a street photographer in LA for over 30 years. So he's had a lot of practice. And he said something along the lines that I found really, really interesting. He said, you practice bass. You practice the guitar until your fingers bleed. You practice the tuba. You practice singing. You rehearse a play. You practice football and running. But next time you see a photographer, ask them what they do for practice, what their practice schedule is.
Oh.
And they will probably look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah, I don't practice. I shoot.
Exactly. And you know, sometimes, and I see that on the workshops sometimes, that photographers with a really good eye, with a really good sense for timing, really don't get the shot because they don't have the muscle memory down to get the focus exactly where they need it, or the exposure where it should be, or to get the colors the way they want them to.
So what should I be practicing?
Well, practice, I mean, those are the three key things. If you have a camera, go out today, take at least 10 photos of things that interest you, because that always helps.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be art, right? This is practice. This is like playing the piano and really boring stuff, but at least those three things. Get the focus where you want. Focus on something close, get the focus there. Focus on something far away, get the focus there. Learn about those focus points in your camera. You have a camera manual, right? That's not just that thing that you leave in the box and throw away. That is something to read. If your pictures come out too dark or too bright, there is something in your camera called exposure compensation, which can help you get pictures brighter when they're too dark or darker when they're too bright. Again, it is in most camera manuals, it's explained really well. So they are definitely worth a read. And the third thing is, if your colors don't look right, there's a tool called white balance. And again, that's explained in the manual. Set the right white balance. And if you practice the focusing, the exposure, and the colors just for 10 minutes a day, 10 photos a day, put that in your schedule and practice it every single day. And this way you will be a good photographer in no time.
So you're saying that part of this is just learning how to use your camera. Like getting adept, facile, quick with the buttons, the settings, the knobs, knowing what its capabilities are, but also how to get to them fast.
Imagine you see something unfold, a situation unfold that is like, oh, photographic gold. I don't know, a child holding an ice cream cone, looking the other way, and a dog walking up, starting to lick the ice cream cone, or something like that. You know, a really interesting scene happening. Sometimes these things happen within seconds. And if you then start to, okay, oh my God, where do I get the focus? How do I get the, exposure? It's perfectly fine most of the time to leave the camera automatic, but it might misfocus because there is something more interesting to the camera. Or
right,
it might get
right.
the exposure wrong because the child is wearing something white in the camera that throws the camera off. Or you might get strange colors because yeah, because the camera is not perfect.
You know why? Before we went on vacation, I bought the cameras like 6 months ahead of time. I think a lot of times people buy a camera right before they go on vacation. And so you're learning how to use a camera while you're taking pictures, and that's not a great idea. So I got these Olympus cameras like 6 months ago, so I'd be ready. I'd know how to use them. And so getting out there and practicing.
That's exactly what you need to do.
Yeah, I think that does make a lot of sense. You know, another way to practice, take a workshop. I think a lot of us, I've never taken a photographic workshop, and I think a lot of us think, oh, that's for somebody who's really serious or a pro. They're fun, I think, huh? I'm asking the wrong guy. He does them.
I have a reason to say they're fun.
Yes, no,
fun. Actually, if you go to the website, if you go to discoverthetopfloor.com, there are a lot of videos that show you like what it's really like, and people seem to enjoy them.
We're going to Venice, and I went online to a site called toursbylocals.com, and they had a professional photographer. She does wedding photography in Venice. And 4-hour photo expedition with her. So I booked that. So Lisa and I are going to go out with our cameras, our new cameras. And she knows where to go, what the best shots are. But she also helps you. She's a photographer. She works with you. And I'm really excited. So this will be my first photo workshop.
Cool.
How about
Very
that?
Cool.
Yeah, pretty
Absolutely
cool. I'm excited.
Brilliant.
Venice.
Tell us about it when you're back.
You might even see some pictures if they're not horrible. If you want to take a workshop, go to discoverthetopfloor.com. That's Chris's photographic workshop site. ChrisMarquardt.com is regular site. It's all, you know, all cross-linked. So you get it to any one of his sites, you'll get to the others. In fact, you just have to remember Tech Guy, as always, just remember techguylabs.com. That's my site. We link out to Chris's site. Don't forget our assignment. We're asking you to take pictures of something that I almost said something loud, but no, something that illustrates the word or concept of loud. That could be we don't know what. But do take some pictures. You get to submit one a week. You got one more week left. Next week, Chris is going to review the assignment. So we gave you a little extra time. So last chance, go to Flickr, upload them to the Tech Guy group, use the tag in there loud so we know to look for it, and we'll pick three pictures for Chris to look at next week. Meanwhile, TechGuyLabs.com, ChrisMarquardt.com, DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Thank you so much, Chris.
Absolutely.
I really, always a lot of fun. And every time I talk to you, I get inspired to go out and take more pictures. Fortunately, that wears off before the show's over. No. I've been bad. I really want to take more pictures, and I just haven't been around to it. We'll get back to your phone calls. That's something else we got to do. More calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, taking your calls, answering your questions, and I don't know who to talk to, but fortunately, the phone ranger is on your side. No, wait a minute, that's Michael Finney on Channel 7. That's another person on your side. The phone ranger is on is on your team.
There you go.
Who should I talk to, phoner?
I'm on your side. Bob in San Jose.
Bob, 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 Bob. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte, thank you.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, Leo?
I'm fine. I'm very well.
I like you better in the hat.
You saw that crazy hat I was wearing? One of our chat mods, Theater Monkey, gave this to me, and it's kind of a wild kind of a hat. I don't know. I feel like, who is that guy, you know, that guy in the show there? I feel like that one.
WKRP.
Dr. Johnny Fever.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bob. What can I do for you?
I am now starting to use Skype and some other means for voice over IP, and I go out a lot with my laptop to the coffee shop, or sometimes referred to as the local pub, and I want to use a USB headset that, you know, I can wear to talk to whoever and so forth, right?
Yes, sir.
And then maybe if they've got a crappy one, I could say, hey, look, you got to go get this one. And I was wondering what you might suggest for a device like that that's not too big, but it's going to give me good quality.
We've become experts on USB headsets because we do a lot, as you know, of Skype on the podcast network. It's really been an amazing technology for us. It makes it possible for us to have hosts on the podcast network who are all over the world. And Skype sounds so good, so much better than a phone call. You know, this phone call, when they first set up the phone system, you know, Alexander Graham Bell and the Bell system, they figured out what could they reasonably expect to get reliable carrying capacity on those old copper wires. And they decided on really a very low quality, I think it was 7 or 6 bit sound. Now, it wasn't bits in those days. It was analog, but it's the equivalent of that. And what's interesting is even though the capacity, the capabilities have improved so much in our phone system, we're all on VoIP, whether you know it or not. Most of the phone calls you make ultimately are carried as data, not analog signals. It's just more efficient. And nevertheless, they never increased the bit rate of the audio. So phone calls always still sound like you're talking to her. They spent some time figuring out what's the lowest quality we can get that's still intelligible. And that's what a phone call is. But we're all so used to it, nobody thinks about it. I was very grateful when Skype came along because the engineers at Skype said, well, you know, there's really no reason to do that. We have enough bandwidth. We can do much higher quality. So a Skype call sounds almost like the person's there. Now, the key is exactly as you say. Well, there's two keys. One is upstream bandwidth, having good bandwidth. But nowadays, sufficient bandwidth is pretty ubiquitous. You only need about 384K upstream to really get a good sound. So you pick the other side of it, which is a good microphone, good headsets. And this is sad because a lot of times people use Bluetooth headsets that are designed for the phone system, and the quality is terrible.
I'd like to be able to do that, but I already know that quality is terrible.
Yeah, yep. And because they just decided, well, that's a phone call is bad. And even though it's all, every bit of the chain can do much, much better. So that you're absolutely right. And you said USB, and that was also smart. Because you can, you know, most headsets are analog. You plug them into the jack on the laptop computer. You know, just like the iPhone or, you know, any phone's headset, those three-ring jacks that you plug into your smartphone that has a little microphone on it and little earbuds, that's all analog. But if you could plug it in as a USB device, you would get a much better sound quality, and that's what I recommend. So don't use analog. Use USB. And the ones we generally recommend are from Plantronics. They're not very expensive. I like the Dot Audio 655. Now, this is a little more bulky. They have smaller ones that are foldable and stuff. Any of the Plantronics USB headphones are going to be very good. The quality of the microphone is excellent. This is $29 on Amazon. It's cheap.
Yeah, really.
It's cheap, and it really does sound good. A lot of these are made for gaming. You can use one made for gaming, but frankly, I think you don't need all of that fanciness. So that's the Dot Audio 665. Plantronics makes foldable ones that are good for, you know, more portable. And they do make for $60, for twice as much, the game version of this. I don't know if it's twice as good. I doubt. It's maybe more comfortable on the ears for those long gaming sessions. That's the
I could see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we send people, and I mean, you know, our hosts, 655s all the time. They're great. It's a Plantronics Dot Audio 665.
Okay. Now, just a follow-up question on that. Since you use Skype all the time.
Yes.
And you're using it a lot heavier than I might be using it, but are there any tweaks that I should make in my Skype? And is there some place that might tell me what those would be?
Well, we do have, believe it or not, on our wiki, and this would be a good place to start, wiki.twit.tv. There's a page on like how to be a guest on Twit. wiki.twit.tv. We'll put this in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs. And it has some Skype settings, but some of those have been obsoleted. When Microsoft bought Skype, they changed in a very significant way how Skype works. And I think they changed it for the better. When Skype was first created, it was created by two guys from the Netherlands, who had made their bones, had become famous doing a peer-to-peer music sharing network called Kazaa. So they were experts in peer-to-peer. Nicholas Zennström and some other guy with a trum in his name. And so what they did is they made a peer-to-peer voice over internet system, which was actually a clever idea. In many cases, in the old days when you used a Skype call, you wouldn't go direct to the person you're talking to. You'd go through what's called a super node, and it made it possible for a lot of the work of the network to be done by the users of the network. When Microsoft bought that, they killed it. They said, we don't need to do super. And they were right, by the way, because one of our settings is how to avoid supernoding. Supernoding is not a good thing for quality. So Microsoft said, hey, we can afford to carry the load. So we won't make our users and their systems act as servers. We'll do it all. So some of the settings we used to recommend, for instance, you do use a dedicated audio port that would prevent supernoding, and that improved it. I think having a good microphone, having enough bandwidth, really that's all. You know, one of the things we'll sometimes do if we're not getting enough bandwidth is turn off video. You know, when Skype will prioritize audio, as it should, but adding video means there's going to be some bandwidth used for video, so turning off video is a good choice. I can't think of much else that I'd recommend, you know. Get the big one is get that USB headset.
Yep, well, that's what I'm going to go get. I'm going to put it on order today from Amazon.
Yeah, I recommend it, and there may be others. I'll tell you what, this is what we do, and thank you, Bob, for the question. This is what we do. If we go to techguylabs.com, you'll see the question, you'll see my answer. You can actually see the audio and the video a couple of days later, so you can listen to it. But there's also a comment section. I would love it if you'd put what you use for a headset for Skype and what you think works well. That would be great. Somebody's telling me that the Skype guys came from Estonia. Is that true? Charmin Networks? Just looking... it's too bad. There it is. Nicholas Zenstrom and Janus Fries. They also made Juiced and RDO, which is a music listening system that's still around. It was created. Kazaa was created originally in Estonia, but later sold to a Dutch company. I got it right, but you did too. Curiouser. Nicholas Zenstrom and Janus Fries. Don't they sound Dutch to you? Actually, Janus Fries is from Denmark, from Copenhagen, and Nicholas Zenstrom is Swedish. So it's all up there in that country by the spoon, you know, all up there. What are you laughing at? That's what I call it, the Scandinavia, Dutch, Northern Europe. It's the spoon country. Countries. They probably wouldn't like it if I call them that. And since a lot of them are listening to this show right now, I'm probably in Dutch. But I got a good hat, and that's what really matters. Hey, thanks for the call, Bob. It's a good question, and it's an interesting story. And what's great is I think at least the cell carriers are starting to improve the quality. They now have HD cell quality. T-Mobile's offering this. I think Sprint is offering it, where they've gone beyond the 6 or 7 bit terrible phone audio, and they're getting it's somewhat better. It could be so much better. And I think once we move to LTE. Which is in the cards for all wireless telephony. And that means all of your calls will essentially be voice over internet. They'll all be pure data. Maybe then. I think we should lobby for it. They could improve the quality a little bit. Make it sound like you're in the same room. 8888 Ask Leo. We'll take a break for news at the top of the hour. More to come. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, techguylabs.com. Our show today brought to you by the good services of gazelle.com. Couldn't be a better time to be a Gazelle customer with that new iPhone just out. New iPhones just out. And I think the new iPad's coming any minute now. Now's the time to go get a quote for your old gadgerinos from gazelle.com. Gazelle buys iPhones. They buy cell phones from a variety of manufacturers. You get your HTC, your LG, your Motorola, your Nokia, or your Samsung. They'll even buy Blackberries. You can get a quote right now, and the nice thing about this, you can lock in this quote for 30 days. So, hey, you know, you got an iPad 4th generation. You're thinking, I think the 5th generation is coming. How much could I get for $325? You got it. Then what happens is you go to gazelle.com. You get that quote, lock it in for 30 days, and Gazelle will send you the box with the mailing label. Anything worth more than a buck, they'll pay the shipping on. They even buy back broken iPhones. That's pretty good. You also buy Macs, MacBooks, Apple TVs, Apple displays, iPods. Visit gazelle.com, get a quote, lock it in for 30 days. You may not know if the new iPad's coming, but I can promise you this. The old iPad's not getting worth more in value as time goes by. It's going down. So get the quote now, lock it in for 30 days. They'll give you time to see the new iPad when it comes out sometime this month, to get it, to transfer your data over, and then send it to Gazelle. And that quote is good for 30 days. Payment's fast, too. They'll send you a check, a PayPal, credit, or get that Amazon gift card for an extra 5%. No wonder over 600,000 customers have gone to Gazelle to receive over $100 million in payouts. Free shipping, fast processing, and the best prices. Gazelle.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You are, well, you know who you are. Hey, can I tell you a secret? I've been out of the country for the last 3 weeks. Yeah, I recorded everything ahead of time, but I've been having traveling all around. I will be back next weekend with brand new, all live content. But we recorded all this stuff ahead, and I think that we gave you good shows. So I'm pretty proud of this, and I thank Nathan Staten back at the home office for putting all this together. Of course, Heather Hammond, who came in on her days off to help me record stuff. John Slonina in my office. Tony Wang, who did a lot of editing. It was a lot of work, but it gave me 3 weeks off, and I'm very grateful. We're going to a foreign lands. I went to Italy. I went to Croatia. I went to Montenegro, to Greece, and to Turkey. I speak a little Italian, nothing else. I studied Greek in college, but it was ancient Greek. I don't think much use. But I got to tell you, I am very impressed with the abilities, increasingly good abilities, of my smartphone to help me with this. You know, the goal always was, remember, have you ever read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Douglas Adams wrote that. It was about a time in the distant future where people could put the Babel fish in their ear and it would translate. This was an actual fish that had evolved in such a way that it could read the brain waves of the person you were talking to, so understand, intuit what they were actually trying to tell you, translate it so that you could read it or understand them. It was the universal translator. Someday, wouldn't that be awesome? A universal translator breaking down the walls that separate us. Actually, Google's working on it. They are working towards a universal translation tool, and they're not alone. Microsoft's doing it. Facebook's doing it. Many companies in China are doing it. It's a big deal for China because the Chinese, I think, sometimes feel left out. They're really working hard to teach their students English. This is fascinating. Franz Josef Ock, a German who works for Google, has been trying to build a computer translation tool. He says, so inconspicuous and fast, you'd hardly notice it at all, except as a whisper in your ear. Well, it does sound like the Babel fish. It's quite amazing. If you already have it, if you have Google Translate, this is the tool. And I brought Google Translate with me. What's amazing about Google Translate is you can type, but you can also speak to it. So I'm going to speak to it right now. Where is the train station? And it's going to translate that into Italian. It did it quite quickly. It gave me Italian text, but it will also speak it. Let's see, make sure this is turned up so you can hear it.
Dov'è la stazione ferroviaria?
Ooh, she's got a nice accent. That did that.
Dov'è la stazione ferroviaria?
It did that instantly. I mean, literally. I can actually do it directly by talking to my Moto X, because the Moto X understands my speech. So I can say, okay, Google Now, translate, how much does this cost into Italian? Why pause too long? Let me do that again. Okay. It just translated translate. Okay, Google Now, translate, how much does this cost into Italian? Let's see how long this takes.
Quanto costa?
Oh, that was fast. Now, it shows it on the screen, too, so if the person doesn't hear it or can't understand the Google speech, you can just show them the screen. It can now do this in 71 languages, including not only Italian, but French, German, Icelandic, and Japanese. In fact, it can translate Icelandic into Japanese. You can take a picture. This is amazing. Open Google Translate. You can either speak to it, write, or take a picture of a sign, and it will translate it into your language. Now, it doesn't do very complex sentences, but you could literally, I can go in, let me speak some Chinese. Something a little harder than Italian. Italian's so easy. Let's speak Chinese. Can you drive me to the nearest pharmacy? And now it says, Wow. I don't know if that's right. Would somebody tell me if that's right? Now, I would imagine that it's not perfect, right? If you've ever used computer translation, it's imperfect, but it's intelligible. You can kind of get it. And it's gotten better and better and better. Now, this was all started at IBM many years ago. And in fact, was just a pure R&D project at Google for many more years. They never released a product. But now Google Translate is free. It's on your phone. I brought it with me as I traveled around the world. And the fact that you can speak to it and get it to speak, amazing. Now, I'm going to come back next week and let you know if people thought I was nuts. that's another matter entirely. There are, as I said, Facebook's got a small company that's working on something very similar. It would make sense, wouldn't it, if you posted on Facebook that it could be automatically translated into the language of others around the world. Microsoft's working on the same thing. The European Union has an automated translation program it calls Matic, something like that, Matake. It's designed specifically by the folks in Brussels to handle bureaucratic languages, bureaucratic jargon. Oh, Rick Rashid at Microsoft unveiled their translator at a conference in China. Rashid gave a talk in English. The computer simultaneously translated him into Mandarin. Not only did it do that, but it did it not in a computer robotic voice, but in Rashid's own voice. Wow. Isn't that amazing? And by the way, the article that I just read all about this in is from Der Spiegel, a German newspaper, and it was machine translated, as far as I can tell, beautifully into English by a computer. I think we're making some progress here, which actually brings me to the second story, related story, which is students have wised up to this, and they're now plagiarizing foreign language papers. Now, this is clever. Students have learned that if you plagiarize from Wikipedia, you're going to get caught. Teachers are smart enough now to enter phrases from your paper into Google search and find them immediately. You just can't get away with it. But some Weisenheimer figured out if you took a foreign language article, ran it through Google's translation, and then kind of maybe polished it up a little bit and gave it to your teacher, it'd be a lot harder for them to find. Well, this is an arms race, ladies and gentlemen. The teachers have come back. A professor at the Polytechnic University of Catalonia, Spain, has created a tool that analyzes suspicious-looking documents, even if they've been translated. And they've actually created bilingual dictionaries to check how many words in each text were the same. They've used statistical analysis, and apparently they're showing remarkable results. Actually, it also can find plagiarized stuff that's been heavily paraphrased. Wow. And then if it's flagged by the computer, of course, a teacher can look at it and verify it. This is from New Scientist. Isn't that wild? We are probably pretty close to the day of the babelfish, where you could put something in your ear or at least something in your pocket, like my smartphone, and it's going to be able to translate for me as I walk around town. I cannot wait to try this. I'm going to take it. I'll try it in Italy. I don't think it does the speech for some languages. I don't think it does Turkish, but I can show them on the screen. That might be better anyway. What do you think? What a world. What a world. Hey, we still have a few more minutes before we wrap this thing up. I've got a lot more calls on the board. Let's go to the phones and answer your tech questions. Website's techguylabs.com. Don't forget, I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go with Connor in Castle Rock, Colorado. Hi, Connor. Hey, are you anywhere near Boulder where those rains were?
Oh, no, not right now, but right. It's been pretty bad.
I talked to my son because I was a little worried because I was seeing video of flooding and cataracts and all of that stuff. And he said, oh, yeah, dude, it's great. The school closed down for 2 days. He said, see you, Boulder. He said, yeah, no school. And then I got an email just a little while ago from CU Boulder saying, yes, everybody's okay, but could you please tell your students not to get drunk and go tubing?
Yeah, I saw that on the news.
I think that's aimed at me. my son. Hey, what can I do for you, Connor? I mean, Brad, whatever you're... What's your name? Connor. Yes, Connor. Connor. Brad's next.
Connor, yeah, Connor. Long-time fan.
Thank you.
Caller.
Thank you.
So, I'm severely dyslexic, and I have an iPhone 5 right now, and you can do the speak selection and accessibility features. So, that's where you highlight something, highlight some text, and then you can have it read it to you.
Oh, speak it. Yeah. Okay, yeah, got it. Yeah.
It's amazing. But can I do that on Android? Because I'd like to switch over to maybe the Note 3 or a new Android phone.
Yeah, it's called text-to-speech, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it lets you – the idea is it lets you select text, which is very nice. I have to say iPhone is the best in terms of accessibility. But, in fact, I do believe Android has text-to-speech as well. It's called – what is it called? It's called TalkBack, I think.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. Let me just see. And there are apps that do that, too. In fact, I'm looking at an article that says the 7 best Android text-to-speech engines. So apparently there's quite a few. But you want it built into the operating system, right?
Yeah, because I want to switch to maybe the Nexus because we're going to switch to T-Mobile, and it just would be so much cheaper than to buy an iPhone again.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. TalkBack is the Google. I don't know how easy it is. That's the problem. I guess I should try. I have it right here. Do you have to copy it to the clipboard, or is there a command that just says speak it?
When I'm on the iPhone, once I enable it in the settings, I can just highlight everything in blue, and then it just says speak, and it reads everything like Siri's voice.
You say it out loud? You say speak out loud?
No, it speaks it for me.
But, I mean, how do you tell it to speak?
Oh, well, once I highlight everything... you know how you have copy and paste?
That's a button.
There's a button.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm going to look at assistive technologies, accessibility, they call it, in the Android settings. TalkBack. When TalkBack is on, your device provides spoken feedback to help blind and low vision users. For example, it describes what you touch, select, and activate. Well, I'm going to be annoyed by this in a moment, but let's try it. Okay. So,
enable explore by settings.
Now it's reading me everything.
Tutorial requires explore by touch.
So that's what you don't want. You want it to be more selective. See, what happens is I'm touching the button, but it doesn't activate it. It just tells me what button I'm touching.
Switch.
I know.
Yeah.
On, switch.
I want off now. How can you?
Double. When TalkBack is on.
Yeah, I know. No, I want it off. So TalkBack settings does have control for when and what it talks back, so you can narrow that down. That's the voice, just so you know. It sounds a lot like Siri. It's a mechanical voice.
Yeah, I've got used to that,
so. Yeah, and it's perfectly intelligible. And I believe you can download... Now, this is one thing that I like about Android. You could, for instance, download other voices. You're not stuck with...
Ooh, that would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a almost infinite variety of voices and accents. And I like to get the Scots guy talking at me. If he's really angry, it's more fun.
That's funny.
Hey, Connor, great to talk to you. I appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. All right, take care. Okay. Brad in Atlanta, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brad. Hello,
hey,
Brad. Hey.
I just saw you take your hat off. I missed that.
Oh, I'll put it back on. I was covering up my talk back because I couldn't stop it from talking to me.
Leo, I have an aunt that lives distant from me, about 350 miles.
Yeah.
And she's in her early 80s. She's sharp, but doesn't have any interest in the internet, laptop, iPad, what have you. And what I'm wondering is, for family photos and videos, could I create a private YouTube channel?
Sure.
And then get a, but I can't. She's got a flat panel TV.
Here's what I would do. You could do it on the TV, but better, you can get a photo frames that you can automatically share photos and videos to over the internet. And she'd need internet access. You'd have to set that up for her. But that photo frame could – actually, I think they might even have some with SIM chips that you could use 3G. And it would automatically get – the pictures and the videos and update them. And she would be, it'd be like magic for her, be like Harry Potter's photo gallery. All of a sudden, the thing's coming alive.
Well, she has her husband, who has Alzheimer's now, in the past, had internet access set up, and they have wireless. And what I'm wondering is, if I created a private YouTube channel, and then I got a Chromecast here at the house, and paired it or activated it, whatever the proper term is, and then sent the Chromecast down to her to connect. She's good with the TV and remote.
You'd have to go there.
Call her up.
That's a great idea. Yeah, you put the Chromecast on her TV, but you would have to set it up there. You cannot, because it needs to see the Wi-Fi, and then you add the password. So
it has to be a local Wi-Fi.
You'd have to go up there, I'm sorry to say, set up the Chromecast and leave. And then you're right, she could. She has to throw the YouTube to the Chromecast. Does she have a computer or something?
Okay, so I couldn't call her from it. She's in Florida, I'm in Atlanta. If I called her up and said, you know, turn your TV to the Chromecast input,
wouldn't work.
Then I could not send her.
No, you have to be on the same Wi-Fi network as her.
Okay.
So that's not the solution. She's good with the TV. Let me think of what the best TV. I mean, there are TV. If she wants to get a new TV, there are TVs with YouTube on them. That's easy enough.
Right.
There are also TVs, many TVs that you could send her every once in a while a SIM chip. She could plug into the TV and it would just do all the pictures. If you had an Apple TV on there and an iPhone or an iDevice, you could have your photo stream on her screensaver, which would be kind of cool. Pictures that you take would automatically show up that way. Roku would do the same thing with Dropbox, for instance. So you could that might be the easiest thing for you to do, is to have a Dropbox on your system that you put the pictures you want Aunt Matilda to get, and then she'd be set up to automatically do a slideshow from that Dropbox.
Okay, so I would have to get her an Apple TV or
an Apple TV or Roku, the MyPlex app on Roku. It's going to take a little setup on your part, but once it's set up, and she does need internet access, so she has to continue to pay for that. But once that's set up, so it doesn't need a new TV, it just needs a device you can hook up to the TV that'll do that. Cheapest thing to do would be an electronic picture frame.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's. I hadn't even thought of those in so long.
Yeah, I know. That's a category somewhat obsoleted by these new TVs. But that's a great solution.
All right. Well, thanks, Leo.
Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today, as always, brought to you by the people who do our phone system. We love, by the way, RingCentral. It's almost more than 2 years ago that we decided to move into their beautiful brick house studios. And then I was faced with something I never thought I'd be faced with. I'm not a business guy, right? But here we are. We've got a new studio, new office. I can't make our employees use their own phones. I got to have a phone system. I kind of was stymied. I went to Lisa. I said, what are we going to do? Fortunately, we had Russell Tammany, our great IT guy. He said, I've installed this company called RingCentral. This is a true story. RingCentral before, and it's great. You're going to like it. 3 days later, RingCentral calls us up and said, hey, we love you guys. We should do some advertising. We said, yeah. Well, that you know what's interesting? We just bought a system from you. It is and we are still happy. No PBX in the basement. We don't have to worry about maintenance, configuration. It's all, you know, in the cloud. Very affordable. $20, starts at $20 per month per user, and that includes long distance minutes and, I mean, faxes in your inbox, voicemail in your inbox, total control. They even have an iPhone and Android app that you can use to make business calls from your cell phone but not pay for it. Incoming texts to your cell phone look like they're coming right in through the business number, our 800 number. There's something new at RingCentral called call functioning. This is kind of interesting. You program, you can have your when people call my office line, here, let me go. When they call the office line, of course, it rings here, but I'm not always at my desk. Most of us aren't. So you can set it up that we'll ring your cell phone or whatever. But call functioning means you actually tell it the order of devices to ring when somebody calls your number. So your desk phone, then your smartphone or your home phone or whatever. So you don't ever miss a call. Those business opportunities just don't go under the radar. You can even choose how many rings on each phone before it goes to the next phone. This is why digital is great. Cloud is great. Because you don't have a piece of hardware that tells you what you can do. You can do anything. RingCentral's all-exclusive pricing, very affordable with no setup fees. Start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. That's a great way to go. And we've arranged for a special offer for just for our listeners. When you buy a desk phone at RingCentral, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. So call 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980, or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Everything you would get and more from a PBX in the basement. It is, and of course, expandable as needed, all in software. Beautiful thing. It's a thing of beauty and a joy forever. 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com. Use the promo code TWIT. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
On switch.
I can't get her to stop talking. She's touching. Okay, we'll stop talk back. Okay.
Okay button.
Shut up. I am never more rude than when I'm talking to Siri.
Well, it's okay because Siri doesn't really have feelings. Maybe is Chris going to help me with this?
Yes.
All right, Chris in Buffalo. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
First of all, so it shows, it says, I mean, I'm getting hopeful. It says, touching okay will turn off talkback, but I touch okay and it just says,
okay button.
Okay.
Okay,
but
you have to double tap with your finger. So hit it twice. See, what happens is when you're visually impaired, you can't see the screen.
Right.
So they have Explore by Touch, which allows a visually impaired person to run their finger across the screen or swipe across the screen. Right. Then it tells them what's under the finger, and then you double tap on the element or whatever you want to activate.
Perfect. Double tap. So that was a very good tip. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
You saved me. You know what? I was long pressing because in Android, a lot of alternate responses, long presses work. But double tap,
Well, what you would do if you wanted to long press with TalkBack is you would press once. So you tap once, yeah. And then you'd hold.
Got it. So it's a double tap with a long press in the end. And yep. Now, are you familiar with this enough to know that can it do what our caller was asking?
TalkBack talks too much, but there might be some app on the App Store that would just read the clipboard or read the...
I mean, I see TalkBack settings as a lot of settings. You could turn off keyboard echo. You could turn off speak notifications. You can have it shake to start continuous reading, which is very cool.
Yes.
So if he had a screen with full of text, he might actually prefer that than having to select it and say,
That's true. And you can turn on accessibility under the accessibility. There's a widget. You press hold the power button, then you can press two fingers, and then it will start TalkBack for him.
I love this shake to start continuous reading. What a great idea. And in fact, it'd be easier for him than a blind person because he'd know where he was on the screen. All he'd have to do is enable that and everything else he could turn off.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I really appreciate it. Do you use this, Chris? Are you blind or if you don't mind my asking?
Yes, I am. I actually run my own company teaching people how to use this.
Well, we've talked before, haven't we?
No, we have not.
All right. There's another person that does that who listens to the show.
I do listen to all of your podcasts
as well. That's awesome. So let me ask you then you have more experience than a lot of people, iPhone versus Android, which has the best accessibility?
They're both pretty much the same.
Okay.
There are some things where iPhone works better, like, for example, the interaction with Siri. When you have VoiceOver on and you're speech in, speech out, it's second to none.
Yeah.
On the Android, sometimes it will listen to itself talk.
That's not good. You mean it gets in a loop talking back to itself. That would be bad.
Yeah, it's real bad.
It might be kind of humorous, though.
Not when you're trying to use it.
No, it's a little frustrating. Wow. But generally, the capabilities are similar. I mean, I think each company watches the other and says, and Apple was the first, and they really were amazing.
Yes, they were. They really put it out the way that, you know, they're the ones that came up with this Explore by Touch feature, and Android didn't have it until Jelly Bean.
Right. Well, good. I'm glad they're both doing it. I mean, this is really, in some ways, I think these touch screens are better for blind users and other people with other disabilities than a real computer.
Well, to make them accessible, you have, you know, off the shelf, you go and you buy this phone off the shelf, it's accessible. And it just...
Isn't that great? You don't have to buy JAWS for $1,000 or anything. It just works.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, great to talk to you. Keep in touch, because we get these questions a lot. It's nice to have an expert.
Will do. I actually tweeted you the answer, too.
Oh, yeah. That's what I need to do during the radio show. Read Twitter. Lord. I should, actually. There's quite a few people who talk to me on Twitter. So I probably should pay attention. Hey, thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls here. Let's see. Pressing the magic button will pull up Alan in Troy, New York. Hi, Alan.
Hey, Liam. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm going to be in Troy, Turkey, Ephesus. the original Troy, you know, the one where Helen got, you know, caused a little trouble.
Well, so I'm actually a senior at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
RIT, yes.
Yes. No, actually,
no, that's RIT. That's RPT.
No, RIT is the best.
That's
no.
Rochester. This is Rensselaer. Much better.
Yeah, much better. I graduate in December, actually.
Congratulations. You're excited, I bet.
Thank God.
What are you studying?
I'm actually in a degree program at social sciences and engineering.
Far out.
So my major, I do civil engineering courses, but on top of it is political science and all that kind of stuff.
What a great, did you make that up or is they actually have that major?
Oh, it's called the Science Technology Society program here.
Great idea. Who else would have that but Rensselaer? That's a great idea.
Cornell has what department? Stanford.
That's a great idea. So it's preparing engineers to be part of society.
Yeah.
As opposed to sitting in a corner all alone. That's good.
Yeah.
We need more of that. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to enter the job market soon.
Good.
And so I'm trying to figure out what technical skills would you recommend that I really brush up on, that I really get developed so I can be more competitive for employers.
Well, I actually think you have a real head start because this kind of knowledge of... I'm not confusing, by the way, this with social media, you know, but it is relevant in the sense that you, I think you would design software that was more aware of how humans actually interact. It seems to me your degree would be great for. Well, now do you study programming or is it all just mechanical engineering?
It's civil engineering courses and political science stuff. But I've dabbled with, you know, Java and those kinds of things.
Let me just say flat out, no matter what your background, if you can write mobile apps, you're a hot commodity, obviously, right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys like you coming out of school don't even go to work for Facebook or Google or Apple or Microsoft. And those companies are dying for graduates. You could get a job at Google if you knew how to write apps. And did it well. And I think what you should do is pitch them on, not only do I know how to write apps, but I know how humans think and interact and feel. I understand politics or whatever. You know, this is where there's a real skill that is unique, which is you understand engineering. Hey, people understand engineering dime a dozen, right? Everybody's studying that in school now. But you understand engineering plus. And whatever that plus is what makes you a little bit different from the other guys and the other resumes they're getting.
Awesome.
So I would really emphasize that. I'd say, I can write a mobile app to die for. I could do that in my sleep. I could have a mobile app for you tomorrow. That's nothing, because it is. There's a million guys who can do that. But I can also, I don't know, whatever it is. I don't know exactly what you're saying, but whatever it is you're expert at. You know, I used to, you know, they asked me this question 10 years ago. I said, networking is the future. Today, it's very obvious where the future is. Mobile apps. It's what it, and half the people who do this, as I said, don't go to companies. They start their own.
Yeah, definitely.
But you need a good idea. And that's where all this extra stuff, you know, if you had started Twitter 5 years ago, you'd be a billionaire today.
Oh, man.
You know, if you started Instagram, Kevin Systrom, a couple of guys. A year later, they sold it for $1 billion. I mean, that's why there's a gold rush in that area. But that's also why everybody's studying it. So what you need to do is emphasize what's different about you.
Awesome.
Got it? Hey, good luck. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I think my brother-in-law went to Rensselaer to study the restoration of historic buildings. This is a great school. All right, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And last segment of the day. I'm sad to say. Let's see how many people we can get in here. Brad in Tampa, Florida, you're first. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Leo. One of your previous callers actually answered this earlier as far as trying to tell you how to, you know, giving you instructions.
The double tap thing? Oh, you knew that. Yeah, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
You could see my frustration as TalkBack wouldn't shut up.
You know, I'm legally blind. I do have some sight. I've tried TalkBack, and I know exactly what you mean on that, you know.
Have you ever had it get in a loop where it's talking to itself?
Yes.
I want that to happen. That's hysterical.
Android's also got a screen magnifier feature in the accessibility options that I think is actually really good for visually impaired people. It's trying to remember. I'm on the phone, on my cell phone right now, so I can't test it out, but I think it's either a double tap or a triple tap.
And it zooms in a little bit?
Enlarge the screen. Yeah.
You know, I am such a fan of Android, and I give lots of props to Apple because in the iPhone, that was really the first phone to take a stand and say, look, we want to be accessible to anybody who uses it. But Android has played catch-up. You know, I just was looking at the history of the HTC phones, and I realized it was only 5 years ago that the very first Android phone, the HTC G1, came out. Only in 5 years, the progress that they've made is amazing. And, you know, comparing what Apple's done now with the 5S and the 5C and the latest versions of their phones, and then I look at the variety and the quality and the flexibility. That's, I think, where Android is tops. The ability to do anything you want. You want a different keyboard? No problem. You want different fonts? No problem. And it comes to to me, I see this particularly because I'm not a big fan of the new iOS 7 colors and icon, but you can't change those. That's it. Apple's way or the highway, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, so you're an Android. Did you switch from iPhone or?
Yeah, actually, I did. I had the. I started out with the first iPhone.
As I did.
Back
in
2007.
And that was a revelation. And please, I mean, don't get me wrong. iPhones are amazing.
Oh yeah, and I mean, I was diehard in the iPhone world, you know, until I would say Android matured a little bit. I would say around Ice Cream Sandwich or so is when I switched over.
Yep. That's when it started getting good. Yep.
Yep. And so, you know, see, it's been just a revelation. And now you can say I'm sort of on board with Google.
Well, that's, of course, you know, then that's something that not to diminish, because what keeps people using an iPhone? The Apple ecosystem. And Apple does everything they can to keep you locked in there to the point where they actually got rid of Google Maps. For Apple Maps, which, you know, looking back, might have been a little bit of a mistake, but it was all about saying, hey, you're locked in. We want you to be in an Apple universe. And Google's done the same exact thing with Android. I mean, that's the whole strategy of Android. Get you using all those Google apps, all those Google things. And, I guess I could say I go kicking and screaming, but it's so functional. It's so easy to use. It's so powerful. I love Google Calendar. I love Google Voice. I love Google Mail. They got me. And iCloud, with all due respect to Apple, doesn't compete.
No, you know, Apple's never done good at the in the cloud anyway.
Network services are not Apple's strength. No, I agree.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, they could compete strongly, I think, if they could just get iCloud working. Mm-hmm. But they just can't seem to do it. Well, hey, I appreciate your call. Thank you, Brad.
One more thing. Do you have another moment?
Sure, for you, all the time in the world, whatever. Yes.
No, I was actually going to point out something. I being legally blind, my vision is actually 20/400, and something that's actually amazing is that I've actually been using Google Glass.
Wait a minute! You got those Google the glasses that you wear on your head?
Yes.
You're a glass explorer, they call it.
Yes.
How did you do that? Were you one of the people who posted on Google Plus or tweeted about it? Or
Yeah, on Google Plus.
Awesome.
And I was actually nervous the entire time because I was not sure if I was actually going to be able to see the screen.
Yeah, it's tiny. It's just, it's like right under your eye, your right eyebrow, and it's it's a tiny little screen. I don't know what it is, half an inch or something. It's tiny.
And, well, that's another thing I was going to say is with the screencast feature, the things that I can't read, you know, I can look at on the phone if I need to, which I guess defeats the purpose. But at the same time, it's got that read aloud feature. They really need to build TalkBack into Glass.
Well, remember now, what you're playing with is I probably wouldn't even call it an early beta. It's like an alpha. It's like the first version of something. Yeah. Google is not selling it. You know, you had to beg them to give it to you. And even then, you had to pay $1,500, which is an that's not a real product, at that price point. So understand that what it does right now is really just Google playing with the idea. I expect that before it's a real product, and it might be next year that Google does this, but before it's a real product, they're going to add a lot more capabilities. You should be able to install a wide variety of apps. There is an app store now, and they're encouraging people to create apps for it. It still requires a phone. You got to tie it to an Android phone in your pocket, but that would be another thing. I'd be interested to see if they can do it without having to, if it could become your phone.
Yeah.
If you're going to talk about wearable computing, to me, it doesn't take off if I have to have another computer. You know, the thing should be, work on its own. Whether it's a watch or glasses or a belt or a fanny pack or whatever, I shouldn't need some other device for it to work. So I'm intrigued by Google Glass. I think it's, as I am by the imagined Apple Watch, which, and in neither case will we see anything until next year. Everything we've seen so far, like the Samsung Galaxy Gear, the Samsung Watch they announced September? That's that's a non-starter as far as I'm concerned. It's not what we're looking for. I think there is a future in wearable, but I just don't think it's here yet. Hey, it's good to talk to you, Brad. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
I do has to run right now. Believe it or not, folks, this whole time you've been listening to me, I've been in Turkey. Not gobble gobble, but over on the Adriatic Sea, I've been on vacation. But I come back. We did a lot of these pieces of these shows ahead of time. But I'm going to be back next weekend, so I will tell you many tales of traveling around the Adriatic on a boat without internet access. I will also probably have a large cell phone bill to cry over. But I'll also bring back some pictures. I one of the things I did on that trip is took a lot of pictures. I brought a number of cameras, underwater cameras, portable cameras, big, heavy cameras. So I will have some stories to tell about to take technology on the road when I return next week to be live in studio. I thank you so much for being here. As always, every weekend, it's so much fun. You too, Heather Hammon, to Nathan Staten, who put a lot of work into making these shows possible. It's not easy to do a show when your host is not actually here. And he did, he made it work. At least I'm guessing he made it work. I'm not here.
How should today be any different?
I could
than
be
any
in
other
a
day.
Yeah, I could be in a box, in the closet right now, 18 reel to reel tapes, and he just never even thought to bring them out. I don't know.
I'm never sure if you're really here or not.
Yeah, you're on the other side of glass. It could be. I could be a holographic projection. You wouldn't know, would you?
Right.
But same back at you. Back at you. I don't know. Oh, my gosh.
Disappear.
Like Max Headroom, you're starting to stutter. That's not good.
Or that's Princess not good. Leia.
Oh, that's right. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. I had a big debate with Carrie Fisher over that. Do you know? Many years ago, I was interviewing her, and I said, that beginning of that is cut off. She said, no, it's not. I said, yes, it's help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. She said, no, it's the whole thing's there. I said, no, listen to it. Anyway.
You're like, Carrie, listen.
Carrie, listen.
Happened in post. It says, you weren't even in the room.
It says, help me.
Yeah. And it's cute that way. I mean, you get the idea.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. Yes, thank you, Heather Hammond, for being here. The Phone Ranger. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you all for participating. Of course, even if I'm not here, the show notes are techguylabs.com. That's our website. Thanks to James DeRuvo, who scribbles as I speak, gets our early show notes up. And then Josh Windisch from my office, newlywed, by the way, newlywed Josh Windisch from my office. Yeah, he found some woman to marry him. I was shocked.
No, another unavailable.
Yep, another one down. Another one bites the dust. Sorry, Heather. Josh Windisch and Vanessa, congratulations. But he's back, and he's doing the show notes at techguylabs.com. All the questions and answers are there, audio and video, always free. Hey, thanks, everybody. I will be back next weekend. Thank you for joining us. But it's time to say goodbye. Join me again next week for another thrilling, gripping edition of the Tech Guy Show. And have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.